The people of Earth must not do as the child forbidden to play with fire. The child is without experience and, in spite of the prohibition, he disobeys and burns himself. Once burnt, he knows that the adults were right. He won't play with fire again, but he will pay for his disobedience by suffering for several days afterwards. Unfortunately, in the case that concerns us, the consequences are much more serious than the burn of a child. It's the destruction of your entire planet that is at risk, with no second chance if you don't place your trust in those who want to help you. It interests us to see that recently established ecological movements are gaining in momentum and power, and that the young people of Earth are carrying other sensible people along with them in their fight against pollution. There is only one solution, as Arki told you, the grouping of individuals. A group is only as powerful as it is large. Those whom you call the conservationists are becoming stronger and stronger and will continue to do so. But it is vital that people forget their hatred, their resentment, and especially their political and racial differences. This group must be internationally united, and don't tell me that is so difficult, for already on Earth there exists a non-violent and very large international organization, the International Red Cross, which has been functioning effectively for quite some time. It is essential that this conservationist group include in its programs not only the conservation of the environment from direct damage but from indirect damage as well, such as that which results from smoke, exhaust fumes from vehicles, smoke from factories, and so on. The danger comes not from slow climate changes but from overheating the planetary interior. Earth nucleus can explode and then there will be no second chance indeed. For information about the latest discoveries, see sciresearch.com/geophysics.html. The wastewater from large towns and factories, which is chemically treated, is also harmful and empties into river systems and oceans. Smoke from the USA has already caused more than 40 lakes in Canada to become sterile by means of the acid rains it provoked. The same thing is occurring in Northern Europe due to pollution from French factories and the German Ruhr. Now we come to another kind of pollution that is of no small concern, though people might readily dismiss it. As the great Thora told you, noise is one of the most noxious pollutants, for it upsets your electrons and unbalances your physical compartment. I haven't yet mentioned these electrons to you and I see that you are not following me very well. A normal human astral body contains approximately 4 billion, trillion electrons. These electrons have a lifespan of approximately 10 billion, trillion of your years. They were created at the moment of creation. Your astral body contains them and, when you die, 19% rejoin the electrons of the universe until required by nature to form a new body or a new tree or animal, and the 81% rejoin your higher self. I don't quite follow you, I interrupted. I know, but I intend helping you to understand. An astral body is not quite what you would call a pure spirit. On Earth, there is a belief that the spirit is made of nothing. This is false. The astral body is composed of billions of electrons, exactly marrying your physical shape. Each of these electrons has a memory and each is capable of retaining as much information as is contained in all the books that fill the shelves of an average town library. I see you are staring wide-eyed at me, but it is as I say. This information is coded, like a microfilm containing all the plans of an industrial installation that a spy would be able to pass in a cufflink, though much more miniaturized than that. Certain physicists on Earth are now aware of this fact, but the public, at large, hasn't been informed of it. Your astral body transmits and receives messages, by means of these electrons, through the channel of your brain, to, and from your higher self. Information is being transmitted without you being aware of it, thanks to a weak electric current from your brain in harmony with your electrons. Since it is the higher self which sent this astral body into your physical body, it is in the natural order of things that your higher self should receive information from your astral body. Like all things electronic, the astral body, tool of the higher self, is quite a delicate tool. During your waking hours it is capable of sending messages of extreme urgency to the higher self, but the higher self seeks much more than that. Footnotes 1. 4.0 × 1021 = 400 electrons. Editor's note 2. 1022 = 10 years. Editor's note 3. Please see http://anajournal.net/choice.html for more information about the recent 2001 discoveries about physics of consciousness. Editor's note dash so, during sleep, your astral body leaves your physical body to rejoin the higher self, either passing on required information or receiving information or orders. You have an old saying in French that, the night brings counsel. This saying emerged from common experience. Over the course of years, people noticed that, on waking in the mornings, they often had the solutions to their problems. Sometimes this is so and sometimes it isn't. If the solution will be profitable to the higher self, you can be sure that it will be presented to you. If not, you will wait in vain. Now, those people who, through very advanced and special exercises, are able to detach their astral bodies from their physical bodies, will be able to see a light, silvery blue thread, such as you saw yourself, linking their physical and astral bodies. Their astral bodies, likewise, are visible during the time that the separation lasts. It is these same electrons which form your astral body and which create the visible effect of the thread. I see that you follow what I am saying and that you have grasped my point. Let me finish by explaining the dangers of noise. Noise directly attacks the electrons of your astral body, creating parasites, to use a radio and television term. If you are watching a television screen and notice several white spots, this is an indication that a small parasite is at work. Similarly, if someone is operating an electric tool next door to your house, such large parasites will be produced on your screen that the image will distort completely. The same thing occurs with the astral body, but unfortunately you won't be aware of it in the same way that you are with a television screen, and, it's much worse, since noise damages your electrons. And yet people say, oh, we get used to it. Your brain tenses, so to speak, and your psyche initiates self-defense mechanisms, but not so the astral body. A parasite invades its electrons, which, of course, has disastrous repercussions for your higher self. The sounds that reach your ears are clearly very important. A particular piece of music can elevate you to a state of euphoria, while another piece, although very pretty, will have no effect on you or, perhaps, irritate you. Try an experiment. Take a piece of soft violin, piano or flute music that you like and play it as loudly as you can. The suffering of your eardrums will not be as great as the discomfort you'll feel within. Most of your fellow human beings on Earth consider noise pollution to be of negligible concern, but the noise of the exhaust pipe of a motorbike is 3 to 4 times worse than the noxious fumes that it discharges. While the fumes affect your throat and your lungs, the noise affects your astral body. However, no one has ever been able to take a photograph of your astral body and, so, people don't concern themselves with it. Since your fellow earthlings like proof, let them consider this. There are people on Earth who are sincere and who claim to have seen ghosts. I don't refer to charlatans. What they have seen is actually the 19% of electrons that don't comprise the astral body. These electrons detach themselves from the physical body 3 days after its death. Indeed, as a result of certain effects of static electricity, these electrons can be seen having the same form as the physical body. Sometimes, before being reutilized by nature, they are vacant, but they, too, have memories and return to haunt places they knew, places they loved or hated. Or hated? Yes, but you'd need to write not one, but 2 books, if we were to concern ourselves with this subject. Can you see into my future? Surely you can, since you are able to do things which are much more difficult. You are correct. We have previewed your whole life, Right up to the death of your present physical body. When will I die? You know very well that I won't tell you, so why do you ask? It is very bad to know the future, and those who have their fortunes told commit a double error. First, the fortune teller might be a charlatan, and second, it is contrary to nature to know what the future holds, for otherwise, the knowledge would not be faced in the river of oblivion. Many people believe in the influence of the stars, and follow the signs of the zodiac. What do you think of that? To this, Thou didn't reply, but she smiled. The entire return journey was like the first trip had been. We made no stops, but I was able, again, to admire the suns, the comets, the planets and the colors. When I asked Thou if I would be taken back by way of the parallel universe again, she replied in the affirmative. I wondered why, and she explained that it was the best way, since it meant that they didn't have to contend with the reactions of witnesses. I was redeposited in my garden exactly 9 days after leaving it and, once again, in the middle of the night. Postscript. In this book, the author was not allowed to express his own opinion. He wrote this postscript specifically to express himself. Explanation of editor in contact with the author. I am adding this postscript to my manuscript, having completed my writing 3 years ago. During those 3 years, I tried unsuccessfully to have it published, until I met Arafura Publishing, who had the courage to publish such an extraordinary, unique story. It was a difficult time for me, as contrary to my expectations, Thou didn't leave me any signs. I didn't have any contact, either telepathic or physical, apart from a strange apparition one day in Cairns, which was no doubt intended to prove that I was still being watched over, but there was no message. I now realize that the delay with the publisher was premeditated. Therefore, through a natural chain of events, Thou then took only 2 months to bring my book to the attention of the most suitable publisher. They, Thou and her people, intended it to be that way, because 3 years ago the world wasn't ready to receive the message, whereas now, it is. That may seem strange at first, but not to me. Knowing them as I do, I know that they are capable of timing events down to the very second, if they think that they'll have the best impact a few seconds later. During those 3 years, I allowed a few friends and acquaintances to read the manuscript, and that is when I fully understood why they wanted me to write this book and why they physically transported me to their planet. I insist on the word physically because the most frequent response is, "You must have been dreaming, you must have had a series of dreams." Whatever their reaction, everybody who has read the manuscript has been fascinated by its contents. There are 3 types of readers, page 168 in book. The first, who form the majority, have said they still don't believe I went to another planet, but have admitted they were moved by the book. In any case, they have said, it doesn't really matter whether or not it happened, what matters is the powerful underlying message. The second, is the former skeptic who, having read the book 3 times in a row, is convinced that my story is factual, and this reader is right. The third, is already more evolved from the outset, and knows from the outset that this is a true story. I am, however, compelled to give the reader a word of advice. This book must be read and reread at least 3 times. Of the 15 or so people who have read it, each has had something pertinent to say and has questioned me at length about it. A friend of mine is a psychology professor at a French university. Apparently, she has already read it 3 times, and keeps it on her bedside table. I can relate to that. Nonetheless, I've had one reaction, fortunately only the one, from a friend, which upset me. He asked me, for example, whether the spacecraft was assembled with bolts or rivets and whether there were telegraph poles on Thyuba. I strongly recommended that he reread the manuscript. Another of his remarks was that the book should contain more battles between spacecraft or planets, with missiles and deadly weapons. That's what people really like, he said. I had to remind him that this was not a science fiction novel. In this case, I don't think my friend is really capable of understanding this book, so he would be better off reading something else. He isn't ready for it yet. But unfortunately, he isn't alone. If you, the reader, were expecting to be aroused by space battles, blood, sex and violence, planets exploding and spitting out monsters, I'm sorry, you have wasted your time and money. You should have bought a science fiction novel instead. You were warned in the preface. I urge you, now that you know this is not a science fiction story, to reread it in a different frame of mind, that is, objectively and positively, in which case you won't have wasted your time. On the contrary, for the money you have spent, you will receive the greatest reward of your life, a spiritual rather than material reward. Isn't that the most important kind? From the people who have already read my manuscript, I have had a variety of feedback concerning religion, and in particular Christianity. I feel obliged to respond on that issue. If you are religious, and in particular Christian, and have been shocked by the biblical rectifications, especially in the passage on the true identity of Christ who died on the cross, I am sorry. However, I must stress that this book was not written with the intention of criticizing any religion whatsoever, and that these are not my personal observations, but rather, the words of the Master of the Thari, with the details dictated to me by Thal. Page 170 on postscript. They recommended that I record precisely those things that were explained to me, and that I change nothing. I have followed their instructions. I have had many other conversations with Thal which do not appear in this book. Believe me, these beings are superior to us in their evolution, in every regard. I have learned things which are more incredible than those revealed in this volume, but I am not permitted to discuss them, as we are still far from understanding them. I will, however, take the opportunity in this postscript to voice my personal opinion. I must warn the reader on some very important points. I have already heard some remarks concerning this book that haven't impressed me at all. He thinks he's the new Christ. He's a great guru. We should follow his doctrine, or you should set up an ashram, that would go down well, or yet still, you should found a new religion, and so on. I must say in their defense that many of these people have only heard about my adventure. They haven't actually read the book. I cannot emphasize enough that it must be read several times. Why are people so eager to hear about something as important as God and the creation of the universe, when they could be quietly reading about it, away from the noisy congregations? Remember, the spoken word vanishes, but the written word remains. Why do they want to form a new sect or religion with the contents of this book? The hundreds of religions we already have on this planet haven't done much good, have they? The Muslims fought against the Roman Catholics during the Crusades, in the name of God and religion. The Spanish Catholics plundered, raped and pillaged the Aztecs, whose civilization was very advanced for the time, because the Aztecs did not practice Catholicism. In fact, the Aztecs had their own religion, which was no better since they sacrificed humans to their gods by the thousands, as did, if you recall, the Bakaratinians during the secession in North Africa, over 1 million years ago. These religions had been carefully studied by the priests who wanted to keep the people under their rule, so that they could maintain power and wealth. Any religion is like politics, with its leaders' arrogance and thirst for power. Christ mounted a donkey, he died on the cross. A religion was born, the donkey transformed into a Rolls Royce. The Vatican is one of the wealthiest powers on this planet. In politics, the insincere politician, and there are many of them, is puffed up with pride. He wants to be admired, along with his wealth and power, and only then is he satisfied. And what about the thousands or millions of people cheated by him? Are they satisfied? Thal told me that this book is not only intended to enlighten the inhabitants of this planet, but also to open their eyes, wake them up to what is happening around them. Thal and her people are very concerned about the ways in which we allow ourselves to be led by a handful of rotten politicians, who skillfully make us believe we are free and democratic, when, in relation to the universal law, we are no freer than a flock of sheep. We may occasionally stray from the path and think we are free, But that's an illusion, because we end up in the meatworks without even realizing it. The politicians use the word democracy like a smokescreen. The majority of politicians have three gods: power, glory and money. They are, nonetheless, afraid of the masses because, as Arki demonstrated, groups of people who really get on well can achieve exactly what they want. Even the Communist Party in Russia has now collapsed, and the world knows, the KGB was a vicious and powerful organization, but I must admit, my, or rather our friends, avoided a huge amount of bloodshed by giving the go-ahead. I've known this for a long time, and they may have deliberately delayed the publication of this book so that I could include this in the postscript. Remember that mankind was created with freedom of choice. All totalitarian regimes deny this, and they will collapse one day. I advise you to turn your attention to China. The leaders of many countries, who have been elected in a so-called democratic fashion, just do as they like, once they're in power. A typical example is the French government, which is still carrying out nuclear testing in the Pacific and polluting with radiation the last great resource we have left, namely the ocean. I already know from a reliable source that the French scientists in Murau are very concerned about the gigantism that affects some species of fish, particularly the parrotfish, which has been subjected to atomic radiation in the area around Murau. These fish have grown to 3 times their natural size. Let's hope the same doesn't happen to the great white shark, which is found in our waters. Furthermore, if you carefully follow the dates of the underwater explosions at Murau, you will notice that in the hours later, but more commonly 2 to 4 days after the event, there is always a large-scale earthquake somewhere on the planet, following the explosion, of course. French politicians have thus been committing a crime on a planetary scale for several decades. I am sorry and ashamed to have been born French. Saddam Hussein also committed a crime against the planet when he set light to hundreds of oil wells. He should also be tried for the atrocities he committed in Kuwait. What is the United Nations doing about it? In Brazil, the governments that are systematically destroying the Amazon rainforests and their own next generation are also committing a crime on a planetary scale. The people who say that the system must change are doing nothing about it. Everybody is grumbling about the bad penal system we have. Of course it is bad. The laws appear to have been made in favor of crooks. So do something about it. Remember the penal system of the Bacchanalian Indians? It wasn't unlike the Aztec system, which was excellent because of its efficiency. It isn't enough to say the system is bad, they should change it. They, whom do we mean by they? The parliamentarians, the heads of state, all those elected by the people, by you. In order to change the system, the laws must change, along with their leaders. You must force the politicians who represent you to change the inefficient laws, the inefficient system, once and for all. The politicians are generally too idle to undertake the task on their own. Each law requires a great deal of work and responsibility, and that's often too much to ask, because, as I've said, most of them are there for the prestige and big salary. Incidentally, if you want to attract good politicians, start by cutting their salary to that of a suburban bank manager and you will find that there are fewer applicants, but those who remain will be sincere human beings and genuinely want to do something for the people. You are the people who voted for these politicians and most of you have had enough. They haven't done what you expected them to do for our country. Someday, the time will come when the citizens must force them to do their jobs, to fulfill the promises they made to the majority who elected them, before the election. When there is no other solution, ordinary citizens can force politicians to do their duty, they must. Careful, we are not talking about anarchy here, just discipline. In a country you need the discipline, not of a totalitarian regime, but of a democracy in which promises are kept. If promises are broken, it is up to you to act because it is abhorrent that politicians disappoint millions of people when they're in power and fool people until the next election. These eminent politicians would be better off doing their jobs rather than spending 80% of their time arguing among themselves over internal party politics. people say to you, "What can we do?" There's nothing we can do, and that is exactly where they are wrong. Ordinary people can and must force the government elected by the people and by referendum to carry out the tasks for which they were elected. Ordinary people possess enormous power. As Aki said, one of the greatest weapons that humans possess, thanks to their intelligence, is the power of inertia. It is a non-violent force, and at his best, as violence breeds more violence. Christ said, "He who lives by the sword will die by the sword." In Beijing, China, a man on his own and unarmed was able to stop a tank with his presence alone. How did he achieve that? Because the soldiers in the tank didn't dare run him over, they were enthralled by the self-sacrificing act of the unarmed man. Millions of people witnessed it on television. Gandhi managed, on his own, to prevent terrible bloodshed. Lord Mountbatten himself realized that if he'd sent 50,000 troops to Calcutta, they would have been massacred, and yet, Gandhi, one man, averted a massacre through non-violent means. Once, in Aki's planet, they blocked the roads with so-called broken-down vehicles. There were 10,000 of them. The police contingent knew it was done on purpose, but they couldn't do anything about it. When the fire brigade or an ambulance had to pass, the people arranged to let them through by pushing their vehicles out of the way. They then pushed them back to where they were. That is the power of inertia. They didn't move, didn't eat, didn't scream. They were silent, confronting the forces of law and order. Obviously, they said, they would be more than happy to clear the road, but how could they, without mechanics? The country was paralyzed. They had no banners, no slogans, there was no shouting or yelling, just quiet defiance. They waited to hear from their adversary, who was sinking deeper and deeper into his lies and deceitfulness. Our letter had already been sent to the government, which was well aware of their demands and knew why they were there. The name of the person who sent the letter was Mr. Citizen. As Aki said, when 100,000 people calmly lie down on a tarmac, a railway line or in the streets and say to the police, "I want tea to go home, please take me home, I am ill, I beg you to take me home," the police couldn't possibly hurl tear gas into a crowd of sick people, for no reason, could they? With the power of inertia, the people brought the entire nation to a standstill, without violence. The outcome was quick to follow. The fat financiers, who carried much financial control in the business world, the stock market crash, the rise and fall of gold prices, and were in cahoots with the corrupt politicians, started to panic because they stood to lose millions of dollars in the market. For every coin the people in the street lost by not working, they were losing hundreds of thousands. So, in the name of their sacred money, they had to do something, and the people won. Little by little, you're being conditioned. That's what our extraterrestrial friends are concerned about. You're a human being, not a robot. Wake up now. Have you ever wondered, just to give you an example, what would happen if the electricity went out in a supermarket with the new cash registers and the new barcode system of recording prices? The checkout assistants wouldn't even be able to add up the goods, the codes on most articles would make it an impossible task. Has it ever crossed your minds that the encoding stops you, the consumer, from knowing the price of a tin of baked beans, unless you go through the list you're given? But that's an arduous task. So you're less and less aware of how much you're spending, and, imperceptibly, the financiers take control of your own money. I knew a charming little shopkeeper who had a problem with his cash register. I arrived while it was being repaired. He sold me two articles at $1.38 each. It took him about 3 minutes to work out the total on a piece of paper, and he ended up giving me $2.34 change from the $5 I had handed him, simply because he'd lost the habit of making such a simple addition, even on paper. He trusts the machine, as do thousands of others like him. People put their trust in credit cards and computers. They're wrong because, imperceptibly, they're no longer thinking for themselves, they're letting the financiers add up for them. Imperceptibly, they're no longer in control. Let's do a little experiment together, and you'll see what I'm talking about. Are you ready? Right, a few lines up, I did an addition for you and explained that I'd bought $2.76 worth of goods, and that the shopkeeper handed me $2.34 in change from $5. Fortunately, you weren't the shopkeeper, as I would have made you lose 10 cents.